This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. This is your host, Tim Link, and I'm super excited you're joining us today. We got a wonderful, wonderful show. We're going to be talking to Erin O'Malley, who's the author of the latest book called The Brat and the Bullfighter, a love story. But is it a bull? Is it a fighter? Is it a brat? Well, maybe one of those three matches. We'll find out. We're going to talk to Erin a little bit about the book and how it all came about and not give away all the great tidbits, but tell us a little bit about it. And then we're going to talk to her about writing the book and writing in general, how she goes about crafting it and how easy it was to put this together. And I'm sure in a day or two, not a problem. So everybody hang tight. We'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Hey, everybody, this is Tim Link, the host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Got some exciting news for you here today. My audiobook is now available. Wagging Tales, Every Animal Has a Tale, is now available in audiobook form through audible.com, amazon.com, and iTunes. It's a collection of 32 conversations I've had with the animals. It's a fun, interesting, heartfelt book that's suitable for all age groups. So everybody, pick up a copy of the audiobook, Wagging Tales, Every Animal Has a Tale. You'll be glad you did.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Joining me now is author Erin O'Malley. Erin, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Tim, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, my pleasure. I tell you that we were talking about the cover. I won't give away the cover. I'll let you describe that here in a minute, but we were talking a little bit about the cover. And of course, the title is a fantastic title, The Brat and the Bullfighter, a love story. And of course, I was like, but the brat and the bullfighter, what are we talking about here? So you have to read the book to find out. But let's get...
Or do you?
Should or do you? You? Well, tell us a little bit, not all of it. Tell us a little bit about the book, how it came about, and how the love story is, how it developed over the years.
Gosh, you know, so this book is a hybrid memoir. So it's told from two points of view. So from my point of view and the point of view of my horse, Artie. I had never intended on writing a memoir. It was always like I wanted to write this book from a horse's point of view. I just felt like this particular horse, I mean, he's a real horse, kind of had been misunderstood for a long time. And so I kind of wanted to get in his head. Also for me too, to learn more about him, because it ended up me going and doing a lot of interviews to find out, you know, before he came to me, what might have happened to him and everything like that. But as far as the title, this isn't really maybe much of a giveaway, but The Brat, I'm the brat. Not the horse. Never the horse.
Never. And you definitely don't want to say it to their face, even if it
no,
is true.
No. And I get very angry if someone calls my horse a brat or naughty or things like this, because I'm like, you just are not looking at this from the right perspective. So, I grew up an army brat. So I moved around a lot. And then the bullfighter is the horse, and he's a Lusitano. He was bred in Brazil, but the Lusitano is the national horse of Portugal. And they were bred for the bullfight. But there's a little bit of a double entendre with that, in that I think this horse fights bull. Like, he doesn't put up with, you know, BS. He doesn't suffer fools. He's going to call you on things and make you think a little bit. So that's the brat and the bullfighter. And maybe I'm a little bratty too. But yeah, never the horse.
No, I love it. I love the fact, you know, because like I said, when I first saw the title, I thought it was a fantastic title to begin with. And then trying to determine, you know, who's the brat, who's the, you know, army children get called brats all the time.
Yep.
So if it would have been about your life as, you know, it would have been a great book to begin with, your life, you know, traveling around the world or being forced to move from place to place. That's one whole story. But then you got the whole bullfighter thing. You think, well, what's that all about? And it's actually about this fabulous horse, like you said, that has very strong opinions on things, we'll say, and it has a very strong character and spirit, and how you guys, form this great relationship.
Yeah. And the first person to call it a love story was actually my father. He was always like the first person I go to with anything I write, you know, talk about the writing process. He's just my go-to.
Nice.
And, you know, it's kind of, I don't know, there was a certain point through the book, I said, well, how would you describe the book? And his first thing was like, well, it's a love story. It's a love story between you and this horse, and how you came to, I really say it's about finding home too, because though we're different species, obviously with very different lives, you know, it was that the moving around thing. And that's kind of how my story ended up coming into it, is that I had a developmental editor And I had written so much from the horse's perspective. And she's like, why did you write? And I was like, because I empathize with these horses. I grew up, I moved around a lot. It was tough, but I was always been, you know, my parents always told me what was happening. I knew when things were going to happen. I knew where I was going and everything like that. But horses get moved around all the time. And you can't tell them that, hey, it's going to be for this long or that, you know, that long. And you take them away. So, you know, we were talking earlier about horses don't, you know, animals don't necessarily like change. So we're taking them out of their routines. We're taking them away from their herds, the things that are familiar to them, their friends. And I always kind of say, like, they don't get to write letters home. They don't get to call. And most of the time, they never see these places again. And horses also, unlike dogs, dogs usually, you know, I guess it depends. But I think horses, on average, have more owners and homes than dogs do.
Yeah.
And even horses, yeah.
I understand it in one way, but on the other hand, I'd never understand it, you know, and the fact that I could not imagine the, you know, I've had a horse before. I was forced actually to give it up as a child because we just couldn't afford the upkeep. So that was tough. But, you know, I think the fact that, you know, horses, like you said, do have a lot of, we'll call them owners. And I don't typically refer to people as their animals' owners. They're human companions. They're their partners. And so I think it makes it tough for a horse. And I don't think we communicate enough with our horses and animals. You know, we communicate verbally with our dogs and cats all the time. And like your father, your parents did a great job of letting you know why you were leaving, why you're going here or there. And we would do that possibly with our dogs and cats, but we don't often think of that with horses. And I think communication is a vital part of a relationship. What would you say about all that?
Okay. Well, the first thing, I love that you said the thing about ownership. I actually, there's a small part in my book that I talk about this because I never like to call myself an owner either. And there's a Hawaiian word called a kahu, and it means you're their guardian or their protector.
Nice.
And that's how I kind of feel about that. Yet as far as communication, like you just nailed it. Horses, dogs, they communicate in such a different way. I mean, their first sort of thing is space. They have spatial language. Like when you approach a horse, they're looking for, like, you can hold your space, you can take space, you can give space. But a lot of people, I think we just approach like, hey, here I am, I'm going to touch the horse, I'm going to do these things. And it's kind of like stepping back and having a little bit more patience. And then also you have the physical, you can watch for like the twitch of an ear or a tail or a blinking of an eye or stuff like that. And for them, acoustic language is the last thing. And it's not that they don't learn language. I mean, I call to my horses, they come to me. I can ask them to do different things. They're so intelligent. They can learn so much. But I don't think, and it's kind of a reason that I wrote this too, is to just, my touchstone was always, if I could change one person's perspective on a horse, to be more patient, to give them more grace, to not just ask and expect immediate results before we want to punish or correct, then I've done my job, I guess.
Nice. I think that could hold true for just about anything, any people, any animals, anything that you could put out there. But it's a great forum to set that up, to let them know that, hey, here's how to respect them. Here's how to communicate with them, how to give them space when needed.
And
I always say, you know, every animal is just like every human. Yes, we have certain breeds and certain characteristics within the breeds. But at the end of the day, they're all each individuals. You know, they have their own personalities. And so we have to find out what that's all about and treat them as such, just like we do with humans.
Oh my gosh, I couldn't agree with you more. Every horse, I think every horse is beautiful and spectacular and magical, but they are so each such individuals, so different. And to take that, again, it's like taking that time. And I love that you said too, this is something that translates into us dealing with people. I mean, I think horses have made me much more. My husband might disagree. He's like, you're the most impatient person ever. But he's like, when it comes to horses, you have patience.
That's
so I'm trying to make that carry over.
That's it. It's easier said than done. But yes, let our horses teach us, I think, for sure. So you never set out to put together a memoir, and your father came up with the beautiful subtitle of it, because it is a love story. How did you actually go back to reflect on, here's the beginning, here's the end, how do I mold this all together to make my message or make the story interesting? And what bits do I leave in and out of this whole love story?
Gosh, it's a good question. So I say it began with a letter. It began with a letter that I submitted for a contest. There was a website that was opening. It was a Lusitano portal. And the grand prize was going to be a trip to Portugal to work with this working equitation trainer. And I'd had Artie for about a year. And I was still kind of like, I'm an amateur. And I thought, I'm in over my head with this horse. But I don't know, it just kind of came to me. I'm going to write a letter from Artie to them to say, Mama needs help. She wants to learn from the best. And miraculously, I won the competition. Whoa, I went over.
Yeah. I love it.
So for some reason, though, I was like, I'm going to win this one. I never win anything.
Manifested it.
Yeah, right? You put something out to the universe and the universe will answer you.
That's it.
But when so I went over and it was one of those once in a lifetime experiences, met the most incredible people. I have met so many incredible people because of that experience. But long story short, they ended up asking me if I wanted to do a blog for them, continuing to talk for Marty's voice. And I had a publisher. This is, and I'm going to say this too. The year I started writing this book was the year of the horse the last time. So it was 12 years ago. This is in 2014. And it was the year of the wood horse, which means it's the year of like planting seeds and grounding. I never knew any of this until this year. I'll tell you that. Because, you know, full circle, it's the year of the horse again. It's the year of the fire horse, which is the year of transformation, momentum. I'm like, oh my God, I couldn't have planned this better. But she kind of came to me and she said, I think you have a book here. And I thought about it. And something, there was another thing that happened about maybe 6 months later. There were two, I had two sort of devastating losses in my life. And I knew where I wanted the book to go. And I knew why I was writing this book now, because this horse, I always say this horse saved me. This horse just took me out of a really dark place and gave me the reason to kind of get out of bed in the morning and to keep going. And he also, in that moment of my significant need, he sort of just changed all the things I was having, you know, problems with. I wasn't connecting with him. He just kind of said, I'm here for you. I got you. So yeah. And then I just kind of went back and said, I want to go back and find out, you know, I did more research and like, cause he was bred in Brazil. He came up through the States through an auction. He's sort of an elite auction, but I was just like, how hard is that? You get on, put on a plane again, that sort of thing. You get it put on a plane, you end up going into quarantine, this and that. But like, long story short, when I decided to add my story to it was sort of, you know, this developmental editor saying, I think you need to have you in there to show why this is so important, if that makes any sense. Yeah, and at first I was like, no way, Jose, I'm not writing. Like, no, like no one wants to read about me. But when she pushed me, I ended up finding out things about like in my childhood that I didn't even know. Like even my mom said, oh, I have all these letters from I wrote between your grandmother and like, what? You have letters? My mom never keeps anything. I went through those. And this is one thing, and I'll stop it. But there was one letter when I guess I was not even 2 years old or something, or maybe I was 2 years old. And it said that, oh, Erin's decided she wants a horse, but it can't be any horse. It has to be a white horse. And I'd never known that I'd wanted a white horse in my life. I'd always, you know, I had Frisians. I like the black horses, but anyway, I probably rambled on too much.
No, that's perfect. What I love the parallels, and I love the fact that, you know, perhaps you didn't see the parallels at first, and you uncovered these little by little in your horse, in this case, and maybe your editor, publisher a little bit.
But brought
that to light, because it is a parallel, because I can imagine, you know, as an army child or army brat, you know, no matter how much your parents explain it, you still had to leave that situation. You had to leave that school. You had to leave the friends behind. You're packing up, you're moving, you know, leaving stuff behind, probably all these things. Yeah. And you parallel that with your love, the horse, you know, it's same thing. You know, all that's changed, all that's packing up and moving, maybe some explanation, probably not. Got to figure it out again, all these things. And it's sort of parallels. And then the fact that, you know, through this, you had to deep dive a little bit more. So like, okay, write something about yourself. You're like, oh no, what am I going to write about? Well, there you go.
You know, it's interesting that you said too, like, because it was like, there was so much moving, you know, I think I'd lived in like probably 10, 11 different houses before I was like in high school. But the constant for me was this love of the horse. And my parents would also, you know, they were kind enough to, I had lessons and I always like, you did riding and stuff like that. But, you know, I would have to leave it behind each time. But I think I wanted to be that constant for this horse. Like when I got him, I wanted it to be like, you know, I see you. I know you've been through stuff, but I'm going to promise you, unless it's for his better good somehow, that I will never leave you. No, you will always have this place. And that takes years for a horse to probably, you know, understand that.
Right.
Yeah, their shoe's not going to drop, fall.
Yeah. And little did you know, the horse was doing the same thing for you.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. You have to like step back and go, oh, thank you very much.
I love it. I love it. I love it. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll come back and continue our conversation with Aaron O'Malley and talk a little bit more about the book, The Brat and the Bullfighter, a love story. So everybody hang tight. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets
on Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Continue our conversation with author Aaron O'Malley and her book, The Brat and the Bullfighter, A Love Story. Now, Aaron, when people pick up a copy of the book and read through it, love it thoroughly, like I do, so it's going to be great. What do you hope they gain from the whole thing? Did you have any sort of preconceived things saying, wow, if they read this and they get this out of it, then I've done my job? Or are there some surprises you're already getting back saying, wow, I never thought about that?
You know, I think the thing is, yeah, I would just like people to think about a horse's mental well-being. I know that like there's a lot of things. We offer them shelter, we get them food, we do all these things to make horses, you know, stay fit and healthy, but I just would like them to think about their mental well-being a little bit more and what they need in terms of, they don't need to just, you know, show up at the barn and ride them and put them away, like spend time with them in different things, going on walks out in the pasture, whatever, just as a way of deepening that relationship and trust and bond and partnership. And maybe anything that I guess I've been surprised, I don't know, it's delightful for me as a writer because I would want to entertain someone. But when people say that they've laughed and cried, I'm just like, you did? Where'd you laugh?
And how can I duplicate that, please?
Yeah, can I do that more? And I'm like, I do hope you cry because there's some things that I'm like, yeah, it's hard stuff. But I just like, it's warmed my heart to just feel like someone's felt something from reading this. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I think the message comes through loud and clear in the book for sure. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful piece of work you put together. Now, I do have to ask you about your writing and background, because you're not a novice to this, even though you're extremely young and not how you've put all this into a small amount of time. But you began your career in Paris, as I wrote, and you've worked for Hearst Publishing, Harper's Bazaar. You've done all the biggies out there. Go back to that time on how that happened, and then perhaps how that parlayed into writing this book, or they're totally separate things for you.
So I guess it was my senior year of college that I kind of started to really get the writing bug. And so when I graduated, I'd studied, well, I got my undergraduate in French, and then I ended up going to get a master's degree in French, studied in Paris. Love Paris. Always wanted to get back to Europe since I left it. You know, I lived in Germany when I was in high school. And then there was another, you know, I moved around a lot, but I was in California and I was like, you know what? I really want to go back to Paris and I'm going to find a job at an English language publication. It was the time, you know, I was sent out actual letters.
Yes.
You know, it's the late 90s. And I ended up getting this gig with Hearst Publications, and it was Harper's Bazaar. I worked for predominantly. They were the biggest fashion, like,
right,
magazine of Hearst, but it was Cosmo, it was Marie Claire, Town and Country. And so I went and I was an editorial assistant, and I would, you know, I was not the one writing the articles, but I would be the one that would go out, visit the different shops, you know, up and coming designers, write up a little piece to be like, I think this might be interested. And then they would send it to the, you know, the editors in New York to get the real writers, quote unquote. But then when I decided to leave Paris, I just kind of felt like, I don't know. I had a broken heart and I still was like, I don't know if this is my place. I moved back to California. And at the time it was the dot-com boom. And I really decided I wanted to get a horse. And the only way to afford a horse in California was to sell my soul to high tech. So I moved into technology and started working, like, you know, prominently in marketing, corporate marketing, partner marketing, you know, security. And I always sort of made my living through writing, but not in the same creative capacity. And I always knew I wanted to write a book. And then this happened to be my debut. But I do have a couple of other novels that I have one that's near completion, and I have another one I'm working on, actually co-writing with a friend. So that's how that kind of happened. It's never too late, right?
Never too late. Well, I think, you know, first of all, when you publish, no matter what you're publishing, it's there forever. You know, especially if whether we're talking about a small piece that's on the internet, you know, that lasts forever.
Yeah.
And then these wonderful books, you know, as long as we have a Library of Congress around and you get a little, you know, code on your book, it's there forever.
Isn't that crazy?
I love that aspect of it. I do. But I think I would have to say, just looking at your career background and what led up to this, I would have to say that each of these experiences have allowed you to build upon your skills and your writing skills. Cause, you know, obviously writing for, you know, editing, co-editing for a major public, I mean, there was none bigger than Hearst Publishing, you know, publications, but then doing that and then going in the tech world and writing and marketing for that, and then parlaying that into now writing novels, memoirs and novels. I would have to say, wouldn't you, that they have helped a nice building block to get to where you are?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, it's also life. It's just the people you meet and the connections you make. I think that's what's so important too. I've met so many brilliant people, you know, throughout my whole career, generous people who are willing to give me a shot at this, that, or the other thing. And, you know, I don't know. I've been fortunate.
I've been
very, very fortunate.
Yeah.
And I just like would say to anyone though, too, like just because it was recently someone asked me, and it's another one of those strange things, like, oh, you're published author, like, how do you do it? And I go, you just sit down and write. There's no other way around it. You just have to kind of do the work, and hopefully it's something you enjoy. And when I think when you're in that rhythm, I don't know if you have the same experience, it's fun.
It's a lot more fun when you put it out and you actually get some payment back on it. That's when the real fun starts. But until that time, no, I think it's brilliant. You know, I always talk about one of my first book that came out. I was doing a speaking event at the Great Southern Book Festival in Nashville. And so at that same time, I was also writing for Dogster and Catster magazine on a weekly basis. And it was just thrilling as can be, because not only was I invited there to speak, but I went into the local, well, they're not a sponsor, so the local Big Block Bookstore. And if Big Block Bookstore, okay, if you want to sponsor the show. I'll name you next time. But in any case, but when I walked in, there was my book right there on the shelf, front and center. And then I went over to the magazine rack and I had a piece in Dogster and Catster magazine. So I had like three or four things going on at one time. And as a new writer, especially a new author and publishing stuff, it's thrilling. It's thrilling.
I was going to say, what a thrill for you, and to have all that at the same time.
Yeah.
And exactly. To be writing about dogs and cats. Like, I'm like, oh.
It's a blessed life for sure. That's for sure. Well, Aaron, where can people pick up a copy of the book, find out more about you, maybe see you in person, all these wonderful things?
Oh, gosh. So I do have a website. It's just AaronO'MalleyAuthor.com. And the book's available, you know, it's kind of wherever books are sold.
Nice. So go out and see it. It's fun. It's fun. I could tell you loads of stories about book signs and stuff. Some good, some tragic, some.
Oh,
in between,
my God.
But they're always fun.
I might
fun.
Pick your brain.
Yeah. And they're always, it's nice to be wanted. And of course, your publishing house is a fantastic group. She Writes Press. So tell them we said hello as well. It's a great situation. But everybody, go and pick up a copy. It's called The Brat and the Bullfighter, a Love Story by Aaron O'Malley. You're going to love it. Just like I did. So go out and get your copy, and get two. Don't give one to your friend. Get two of them while you're there. So Aaron, thanks for coming on the show. Appreciate it so much. Congratulations on the book. We'll look forward to talking to you again about the other novels up and coming, and have fun being out there amongst the people promoting the book.
Oh, thank you so much, Tim. I really, really appreciate your time. So lovely to speak with you.
Same here. My pleasure. Well, we're coming to the end of the show today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Want to thank the producers and sponsors for making this show possible. If you have any questions, comments, ideas, drop us a line. You can go to PetLifeRadio.com and we'll be glad to answer your questions, entertain your comments, and bring on the people you want to hear from most. And while you're there, check out all the other wonderful shows and hosts at PetLifeRadio.com. It is a Winnie Nay. I don't know how to talk horse. Fun, good sign. And that's a PetLifeRadio.com. So until next time, write a great story about the animals in your life. And who knows, you may be the next guest on Animal Rights, Pet Life Radio. Have a great day.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.